The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
He has taken the gum out of his mouth, folks. That means it is time to get it on. Yeah, let me see the inside of that mouth. Looking good? All right. Dr. Rapp, Stuart Rossberg, gentlemen.
Remember that cone head?
Dr. Rapp, Stuart Rossberg, Animal Hospital out there in beautiful Rossbridge. He joins us every single week here for the Dark Side of the Pooch. We'll get into some mail a little later on the show here. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. This, of course, is a show that you can hear at least 5 days a week here on the TKR app, wherever you get your favorite podcast, available on every major industry, not to mention, of course, right here on our YouTube channel, which is really taking off. I should have known this. Some of my guests like to be videoed, like you and some of my guests that have egos.
So
earlier this week I had Trent Dilfer on. He joined the show and he's now all of a sudden he wants to get on every single week, and Mark Ingram's come on. And of course we do stuff with the Michael Coleman from the Heart of Dixie, Alabama, or Heart of Alabama Dixie. What am I trying to say? Heart of Alabama Food Bank, should I say? I don't know why I'm sticking Dixie in there. A lot of good stuff going on. So greatly appreciate everyone watching right here on the TKR network and wherever you're watching or listening to it. Dark Side of the Pooch, usually you give us a little nugget. You and I have not spoken before we actually get this thing started. Anything interesting happening at the Stowe that you'd like to share with us? And you're nodding your head already.
Well, I mean, you know, we just... We had an interesting case this morning. It was a non-healing wound in a cat. And this cat, it lives in a different town with the daughter of our client. And it just kept having this non-healing wound. They tried to suture it a couple times at the person's, you know, normal veterinarian. And it wasn't getting better. Okay. So they ended up bringing it to me. And we had a look at it today, and I guess it's really strange the difference between humans and animals, both how we're made, but also how our bodies respond to things that could hurt it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, when this cat was in a fight with another animal, and the problem with this wound is that it was bitten by another animal, and then as the animal was latched on, the animal shook its head a lot.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you have animals that are fighting each other.
Alligator bite. Yeah, they're trying to rip it apart. Yeah,
exactly. They're trying to rip it apart. So when that happens, you have these tissue planes. Okay, so like this is the outside of the skin. This is all the subcutaneous skin. So if you have something that grabs that top layer of skin and then shakes it, and maybe will, you know, open that top layer up.
Mm-hmm.
I think the normal thing to do is, well, all I have to do is just suture that back together and we'll be fine. But sometimes people forget about that dead space that is created between the layers of skin. So if you just suture this part up, it's not going to heal because you're going to have a lot of fluid accumulation in this area here.
Gotcha.
So what had happened with this cat is they had tried to close this top part several times, but without addressing the dead space. So you go in and you have to basically make everything bleed again,
mm-hmm.
kind of rough it up
yeah.
so that you'll get the layers to adhere. But you have to do a couple of different layers of suture to close that gap. So then you can close the top layer.
Gotcha.
So that was a non-healing wound that we addressed today. So it's kind of interesting. That's the difference.
That makes sense because I think that we've all gone through. I went through something several weeks ago where I definitely should have gotten sutures. I should have gotten, and I'm like, I'm not going to get, a bunch of sutures. And it was a finger thing. It went all the way down my finger and it wouldn't stop bleeding. And I thought, and I super glued it. I did some super glue, which I heard was okay. And it was extremely painful for about 2 or 3 days. But yeah, you basically had to open it up first. And get all that, because you think about all the crud, the dirt, the stuff that could actually get inside that area. And all I can think about is when I'm making ribs, you know, that membrane, you know, you take the membrane off that, it's like getting stuff in between the membrane and the bones. Isn't that what we're talking about here?
That's right.
So, you want to make sure that's all cleaned out and you've got to make that bleeding. And I'm sure kitty cat didn't like that a whole lot, but that is really interesting. What parts of, there's parts of the human body that obviously heal a lot quicker than other parts of the body. For example, our nether region areas around our genital area tend to heal much quicker than any other part of our bodies. The inside of our mouths, I know I had a spot inside my mouth. I bit it like 7 times in a row last week. I don't know. It was just big enough that I kept getting hung up on my left. And so I was biting and I opened with, and I bit the same spot 7 times in a row. I was like, forgot. And I actually got to the point where I started holding my lip out like this when I was eating just so I would not bite it again. Cause I was not remembering. But it's amazing how fast that heals. I mean, it just heals super fast when it's inside your mouth. For animals, are there particular areas that God has gifted them that were like, hey, listen, this is going to hurt, partner, but we're going to let you heal pretty quick. I'm assuming that area down in that nether region where it's really thin skinned, I would imagine would heal pretty quick.
Yeah. And it's similar to, us and dogs and cats, but any place that has a really big blood supply is going to heal pretty fast. So the mouth is almost, I mean, you have to be careful because there's a lot of important things in the mouth, but you can almost do anything in the mouth and you think that you're causing catastrophic damage and it will heal. So for example, when you're removing teeth, dogs have multi-rooted teeth. And the teeth are super long. Like, for example, like if you're sitting at home, you have a dog or a cat and you want to look at their canine teeth. Mm-hmm. Okay. Raise their lip up and look at the canine tooth, and whatever you see outside of the gum line, there is that and more below the gum line.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you see this much exposed, that tooth is actually probably about that long.
Yeah.
So when you extract that tooth, you have to remove almost all of the bone that is covering the root of that tooth. So you make an incision along the gum line, you elevate the gum, and then you take a burr and you remove that bone from the surface of the tooth so you can remove the tooth. You don't have to do anything to that bone and it will fill in and heal.
Yeah.
You don't have to put a bone graft in. You don't have to do anything. So the mouth is really, really forgiving. Also there's a lot of blood supply to the ears. The ears heal really fast. Mm-hmm. Just skin in general with dogs heals really fast. An organ that takes forever to heal, are eyes. Like if you have dogs and cats, they love to get, abrasions on the surface of their eyes because they're running through bushes or they're playing with other dogs or their face itches and they don't have, you know, hands to scratch very well. So just rub it on the carpet. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, they'll get a surface abrasion on the cornea. Takes forever to heal because there's no blood supply there. So before it heals, this is really kind of incredible what the body can do. Millimeter by millimeter, you can see blood vessels grow on the surface of the eye from the white part of the eye. Oh, wow. So from the white part of the eye where blood vessels are, you'll start to see very, very like hairline blood vessels growing down to where the cornea has been affected so that you can bring in white blood cells and healing factors and stuff like that. It's not like other parts of the body where they already have a built-in blood supply. And so things can start to heal basically immediately. With the eye, you have to create a scaffolding of blood vessels to bring in those things that will fix the problem.
Well, he's Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, Rossbridge Vet. Of course, you can also check them out. They have their website and they're available on Facebook, not to mention Twitter. And of course, go check out their store. They have a fantastic place. I just had my dog in there last week for his annual, by the way. Here. Look at this dog right here. There you go.
Look at that good boy.
He look good. Say hello.
His haircut looks great.
Rainer, say hello, Rainer. Yeah, he looks good. He's doing good.
That looks great.
Here's my other one. You want to come over and say hi to you? Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Frisco. Yeah. Hey, buddy.
Frisco dog. Say hello, Frisco dog.
Yeah, he's got a little more energy than Rainer.
He does. He usually doesn't come in the studio when we're in here. But yeah, he's doing good. Now I got to get this thing set up. There you go. So yeah, they're doing really, really good. They're doing fantastic. Muttmail, info@tonycurryradio.net. This is an interesting question because you were just talking about this kitty cat that got torn apart, and I go through Carrie and Homewood wants to know, what can cats handle in the wild? You know, I brought my cat over here. I'm hopeful that it's still alive somewhere. I'm assuming that someone started feeding it and it's somewhere around here because it was 79-80% outdoor. It never came in the house because I got dogs. But if it got cold outside, I brought it in and put it in the laundry room. But for the most part, it was an outdoor cat. But it could handle itself. And, you know, you'd hear these god-awful screams in the middle of the night. And you just assume that cats are mating, but it could be a raccoon getting after a cat, whatever. So for the most part for cats, is it just if I'm bigger than you, I can handle myself? Like what can cats handle?
I mean, what can they not handle? I mean, I think we've talked about
they're going to get after a raccoon, right? Or a possum. They're not going to be stupid enough to mess with those things. But I mean, you talk about something that was obviously shaking. And I'm hoping it was another dog, but it could have been another just a wild animal.
Well, the thing about cats is that they're really fast. So they have a quicker reaction time than venomous snakes. That's how fast they are.
Yeah, like
you put a cat up against a venomous snake. And I mean, as long as the cat's healthy, it's a normal cat versus a normal snake, then the cat stands a really good chance to win. So number one, they're really fast. They're really smart and they can fight really well. But what we see with cats that come in with wounds is that they get wounds in two places. They either get wounds on their butt or they get wounds on their front. So butt or front.
Okay.
So the ones that get wounded on their backside, those are the ones that were trying to run away. Okay. So maybe they didn't tuck tail and run fast enough. The ones that get, they get wounds on their front, you know, those are the ones that aren't going to back down. Gotcha. But most of the cat wounds that we see, they're from other cats. You know, they're not from wild animals because the cats are going to be faster than those wild animals. But when you get a cat to cat combat, mortal cat bat, you know, that's when you're going to see these lesions.
Do they fight to the death?
Well, I don't think they fight to the death. I mean, I think they will fight to the death. I mean, they will, but most of the time, like I said, cats are resourceful and they're fast and they're smart. So they know that if, you know, they're getting the crap beat out of them, they're going to get out of there as long as they can.
Yeah. Cats are pretty smart too. Horrible story out of New Hope this past week. I don't know if you saw the story. I'm assuming we just assume that since you're a veterinarian, you hear all stories about dogs and pets and cats and dog rings and everything else. Mark Allen, a 2-year-old, wandered from his New Hope home on Friday, opened the gate to a neighbor's property before being killed by the resident's two dogs, a Siberian Husky and a German Shepherd / gold retriever mix. Well, let's hear that again too, because we're talking about a Siberian Husky, which for the most part I think is pretty well tamed dog. You don't hear about Siberian Huskies getting a lot of trouble, and certainly a German Shepherd. We talked about German Shepherds on this show just a couple of weeks ago about how their bark is much worse than their bite. They can get a little skittish if they get trapped into a corner, but for the most part, you get that dog for its bark, not because it's going to be a fighter. They're cowardly. Are they correct? Right. We talked about them kind of be cowardly. And all of a sudden, and it was a golden retriever. You think of a golden retriever mix. I mean, that's about the nicest dog you could possibly have. And all of a sudden we're talking about a 2-year-old that gets in someone's yard and he's mauled to death by these two dogs. Just give me your thoughts on that. What potentially could have happened there? I would assume that. Well, first of all, just tell me your thoughts on that, because I'm sure you see bites. You see bites at your store all the time, but just talk about that a little bit.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about the story that I did not hear about this story, but I did over the weekend hear about another one that my wife was telling me about. It was local. It was a 4-year-old. And who wandered into their neighbor's backyard, and an English bulldog killed this kid, a 4-year-old. So that one was really surprising to me. I mean, you don't think of an English bulldog as being an aggressive dog. I mean, you think of him being like Ugga, you know, lovable, lazy, snorty, snotty, you know, let's sit on the couch. But see, the dogs from this story, Huskies and German Shepherds are skittish, like we talked about. They're also really fearful. So, and you know, when we see these dogs come into our office, a lot of times they are on red alert. I'm talking Huskies and German Shepherds, because they're already out of their element. They're in a place that they don't really know what's going on. They're around people that they don't know, and they are fearful. So a fearful dog can be just as dangerous as an aggressive dog.
Yeah.
Because if they're afraid and they can't get out of the situation, then they're going to do something that's aggressive.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't really, you know, a 2-year-old, I mean, how scary can a 2-year-old be? But to some dogs, anything is scary. You know, anything is scary, but, who knows? These dogs could have been aggressive. Maybe they're super aggressive dogs. Yeah, well, and they're not fearful.
There's this thought, let me back up a little bit. There's this thought that, you know, we hear that dogs sense fear. I was the kind of the kid in the neighborhood where we had dogs on both sides of our street. Everybody in our neighborhood had dogs, and there were a pair of little girls that lived across the street. And if they ever wanted to come over to the house, my mom would ask me to walk them over because there was a German Shepherd that lived next door. And I don't think it would have ever attacked them. We also had a St. Bernard down the street. If you ran, it was going to run you down. It didn't kill you, but if you start running in front of a St. Bernard, it will run you down. Dogs have never scared me. Animals, for the most part, I don't know what I'd do if I was in the woods and I saw a bear. But for some reason, and dogs always sense that they're like, okay, this dude's kind of crazy. He's not scared of me. But it does seem like dogs do sense fear. And I can't imagine what two dogs would be sensing from a 2-year-old.
Because
a 2-year-old is probably not even old enough to be fearful of an animal at that point. Right. So, I mean, that's kind of scary.
Yeah. Exactly. Just like you said, the child may not have been afraid or maybe has never come across a dog. And so it's just the kid's really curious. You know, going back to the story about the English bulldog, you just never know. You just never know. And if you have a dog that has any size to it at all, I mean, I'm talking 30, 40 pounds, maybe even less, a dog like that can do some real damage to a child. You know, a 20-pound dog on an adult, you know, not so much, but a 20-pound dog on, how much does the average 2-year-old weigh? 20 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the dog is the same size as the kid. That'd be like you and I trying to wrestle a Great Dane, which could certainly, you know, take you down.
No, I got a Great Dane. Yeah. I ain't worried about a Great Dane. I got it. I got St. Bernards. Hey, dogs don't scare me. Are we talking about dogs like Dr. Rab's dogs or Tony Curry's dogs? Or are we talking about a dog chained up in the bag? I just can't imagine an English bulldog in a well-to-do 3-2 neighborhood attacking and killing a 4-year-old. Is there something more to the story that we're missing here?
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. And I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I'm certain it was somewhere in the Birmingham metro area, but your dogs, my dog, I don't feel like that those dogs are going to hurt anybody, you know, in any way. But people who have big dogs that are not socialized to any other people besides the owners and are not socialized with any other dogs, they are total wild cards. There was in our area and I'm trying not to give away too much information here because I think it is somewhat sensitive. There was a beautiful dog that was super friendly, really active. The guy had this dog in front of our building playing with it numerous times a week. And I would see them. I would talk to them. The dog was at this guy's like beck and command. I mean, it was voice trained. Didn't need to be on a leash, no collar, nothing.
Yeah.
And then the dog turned 4 and something happened. And I know that it wasn't the owners because the owners are super nice people, super loving people, super attentive people, dog people. This dog was super well-trained.
Yeah.
And, something snapped and the dog became incredibly aggressive to everyone.
Wow.
They couldn't have friends over. They could no longer take the dog out to run and play off leash.
Really?
So they brought the dog in because it had to be euthanized. Had to be.
Wow.
And so, I mean, this dog put the fear of God into everyone in my building.
That's crazy.
So what I'm, my point is that it's a dog. It's an animal. You don't know. I have no clue what happened with this dog. I have no clue what happened, but, and I'm not speculating. What I'm about to say is just an example, and I'm not speculating that's what happened to this dog, just so people can understand. Dogs, behavior can change drastically with certain medical conditions. Like if they get a brain tumor, sometimes the only symptom is their mentation changes, meaning a nice dog becomes super aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the bottom line is you just don't know.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about, and I did this, this past week because I didn't have to bring both my dogs in. Dogs are like little boys when they play together. When you get more than one boy together, they're going to get in trouble. They're going to get in trouble. Windows are going to get broken. Someone's going to get hurt. And I'm not saying that little boys need to play alone. But if you want them to behave themselves, you probably should. But dogs are like that. I get my Australian Shepherd, and I walk him alone, and he is like wonderful with every other dog on the trail. He's sniffing, he's wagging his tail, he's doing great. And then when you get Frisco dog next to him, they turn into devil dogs. They're just fighting. I mean, they're fighting, they're growling everything. And it's like, dude, I mean, and I don't know if they're doing it for each other. I don't know what the situation is. So it just seems like this pack dog mentality seems like whenever you hear a Molly, that's the crazy thing about this bulldog story. Was it the only dog? It was, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you may not live your life and have another story like that.
Yep. And you know, as far as I understand, the families that this happened to are friendly. I mean, they go on vacations together. And now, you know, you have this terrible thing that's happened. And, you know, there's just, there's really nothing more you can say other than it's just a terrible tragedy.
That's crazy. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We'll take your email questions. We cannot do this show without Sasquatch Toys and Comics. They're down there in beautiful Homewood. Of course, Seth Cosby's entire crew. You know them, Ed's Pet World. They've been open for 50 years. Exotic pets, bearded dragons, snakes, frogs, unbelievable fish. They have ferrets. They have everything down there. I get all my animals down there. I get my guinea pigs from down there. They do wonderful work. And of course, now his wonderful pet store is backed up here with, of course, a great comic store. It's a toy store. It's called Sasquatch Toys and Comics. Check it out. It's beautiful in Homewood. Got an email here about snakes. I guess it's not too early to start about snakes because we're in the mid 70s today. Snakies are wanting to come out and start doing a little bathing in the sunlight. Can you explain it? We talked briefly, and this is probably why we get this email question. It came in a couple of days ago about snakes and what happens when things start to warm up a little bit. If you live near creeks or live anywhere where you've seen snakes, cottonmouths, stuff like that, talk about how to make sure your pets are protected because a lot of dogs don't see snakes either. They don't know what to think when they see that first crawled up thing.
So dogs usually get bit in one of two places when it comes to snakes. They either don't see it coming and they're going to get bit on their extremities, you know, around their feet, their lower legs, or they do notice it and they're really curious and they're going to put their nose in it to sniff it or try to bite it or, you know, the things that dogs do.
Yeah.
So the thing about snake bites is if a snake has not had a meal recently, if they're a venomous snake, we're only talking venomous snakes. If they haven't had a meal recently, they have a lot of venom. And when they have a lot of venom and they bite, that's when you can get some problems. Most snake bites on dogs and cats will only cause local problems. You know, maybe some bruising, maybe some swelling. If the bruising or swelling gets bad enough, then they can lose their skin. So their skin will get so bruised that it will just kind of become a big gelatinous mess, basically fall off. The other thing that's more serious that can happen if they're bitten by a snake is they can have trouble clotting their blood. So that is something that you just kind of have to monitor. Anytime you feel like your pet's bitten by a snake, it's best to have it seen by a veterinarian. If you are 100% certain what kind of snake it was, that can be helpful because we can give it, anti-venom, and that can help, with the symptoms of the disease, help stop the progression of the trauma that's happened. But, you know, probably close to 100% of the time, No one knows what the snake was. They don't know if it's venomous, non-venomous. They have no clue.
Yeah.
So,
and sometimes you can see the puncture marks, I think, which is actually kind of cool. I mean, I've actually seen the puncture marks inside my dog's lips.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can. And a lot of times if it's on haired skin, it's going to be really hard to see, mm-hmm. especially if it's a small snake.
Yep.
So, have it seen, they'll do some local treatment. Potentially sometimes we will treat it with antibiotics, because snakes' mouths are really dirty and have lots of bacteria. Mm. We'll sometimes give anti-inflammatories. That's a little bit controversial. I like to give anti-inflammatories because I feel like it does help. And then if we feel like there's a possibility that, the bite is so bad or the type of snake is venomous, then we'll check their clotting times for a few days. And that just, it's a simple blood test where, you're basically being sure that the dog's not using up all of its platelets because of the snake bite and they're able to clot their blood. Because if they're not able to clot their blood, what can happen at that point is they're either going to bleed a lot or they can go into something, basically where they use up all their platelets, and disseminated intravascular coagulopathy. And it's called DIC for short. That happens very infrequently, but when it does happen, it can be fatal.
How often will a dog die by a snake bite if it's not taken in? I mean, it's just,
I have to my knowledge, I have never seen one die from a snake bite.
Yeah. And if you've ever had a dog bitten by a snake bite, and I've had several, in my backyard, we knew it was a, what was it called? What's the brown snake?
I don't know.
A copperhead. It was a copperhead or a cottonmouth. We knew it was because we actually found it where the dogs were barking. We saw the dogs. They kept sticking their heads in a hole in this long and kept pulling it back out. And of course, the one was wagging his tail. And I was like, oh, you must have found it. Of course, the snake had gotten the other two dogs before the third one decided to come along and screw with it as well. But it was kind of crazy because you could actually see not only where the blood was coming through the holes in the bottom of the lips of the animal, but the dog walked in and it just stood there in the middle of, there he goes. You got the dog good. Just stood there in the middle of the kitchen and didn't move. Just stood there. And I'm like, you okay, buddy? And the dog would not move. Like he was paralyzed. And of course you could see his lip and his lip was bleeding. And I was like, okay, he's been bitten by something. But it was the most bizarre thing because you could tell that it was like, he thought he had done something wrong. Like he had just gotten disciplined. You know, how dogs are when they get disciplined, they get really, you kind of cower down a little bit. And he just stood, but it would not move from the middle of the kitchen. So it was kind of a strange thing. It's my boy.
You thought the wound in your mouth was bad. He thought the wound in your mouth was bad.
No doubt.
Try getting bit. Really?
Well, and I'll ask you this because there are some late night pet places. These 24 hour hospital places. You are not that, by the way. And I think people prey off fear. And if it's a late night place, I'm talking after 9-10 o'clock, and you need to take your animal in. You're probably one of those people that would do anything for your animal. So if it's a snake bite, if it falls down some stairs and breaks a leg, chances are, I'm not saying all these places are like that, but chances are they know they've got you. The animal's spending the night, which is going to be another 100 and a half, right? And we're going to have to keep this dog overnight to take a look. So the two times I've had snake bites, I've taken mine in. Both times, they asked me if they had permission to give my dog's mouth to mouth. Now tell me that is not something I allow. It should allow anyone I do to my dog. Mouth to mouth does not work, right?
It can. It can. But you
for a
have
snake
to,
bite?
Well, no, not for, not, I'm, we're talking about for a life threatening, issue.
They wanted me to sign. They wanted me to sign off and say that if my dog needed mouth to mouth sometime throughout the evening to resuscitate it, did they have the right to do that? And I said, no. Of course, that was Freddy dog. I was like, no. If God wants to take Freddy dog,
that's just a boilerplate form that they make everybody sign.
But I knew that if I signed it, they were giving my dog mouth to mouth that night. I knew my dog was going to get mouth to mouth. It was gonna that was gonna be a $500 mouth to mouth to Freddy dog. It was gonna happen.
They don't want to give your dog mouth to mouth. They don't want to.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. We got a lot going on. Springtime. Next week, I want you to think about springtime. It's March, spring break coming up. I want you to think about the different things that our animals need to get ready for. Preparing our animals, our dogs and cats, for springtime. Some of them gotten fat. They've put on the, you know, they put on the Christmas 20 like a lot of us have. They're not in good shape. Maybe they've been inside a lot, but they're fixing to get back outside. Think about exercises, how to get your dogs and cats back on leashes. I want you to think about all those things and have a great show for me next week.
You got it.
All right.
I'll do it.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. 208-0301, 208-0301, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Check them out. They're the best, and they're brought to you by Sasquatch Toys and Comics and, of course, Ed's Pet World down there in beautiful Homewood, Alabama. For nearly 50 years, they've been serving your needs. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Talk to you next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.